Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Now the pitch. Swing a long drive left field. Back goes Call. He's got another one. It's a 3-homer game for Eugenio Suarez. Diamondbacks add the extra point. They lead 14-0.
Great job, my guy, Dave Jagler. Love Dave Jagler and Charlie on the call last night on 106.7 The Fan, our sister station. I don't think I've ever seen a result like this. The extra point made it 17-0 Arizona, and that's where the game landed. 17-0. It was 11-0 after the third inning, and I guess Davey decided to be merciful and take Patrick Corbin out after he allowed 13 hits, 11 runs, 10 of them earned on just 67 pitches. Just 67 pitches. Yeah, in 3 innings. Oh, my God, Patrick Corbin. And they didn't trade Kyle Finnegan yesterday. Grant Paulson's going to jump on with us this hour at about 10:35. Grant really follows closely and knows the trade deadline stuff from yesterday, why they didn't trade Kyle Finnegan, and why the hell they keep putting Patrick Corbin back out there. 17-0, 22 hits. The Nats had just 4 in the game. It was a record-setting night for Arizona. They have now in the last, if you go back to when they trailed 8-4 going into the ninth inning the night before, they have outscored the Nats 22-0 in exactly 4 in exactly 10 innings of play. By the way, Suarez's second career 3-home-run game in Arizona. Unbelievable. Corbin just went from 5.26 as an ERA to 5.88. More on the Nats coming up with Grant. We'll talk some football with Grant as well. Frank Schwab's going to be on with us at 11:25 to talk some NFL, and Ben will be on with us at noon to talk Commanders and training camp so far. So I got a few, I got more than a few. A lot of people tweeted after or during the show yesterday when I complained about my experience at Nats Park on Monday night for the Green Day Smashing Pumpkins show, which was the first concert that I've actually gone to at Nats Park. I haven't gone to any others, and I just didn't think the venue was great. And it certainly could have been my seat location, which was not, you know, that great either. But I asked for some feedback because I was curious as to whether or not the configuration of the park, the setting of the stage, if others had the same experience. And I will tell you that most people that reached out to me said they think Nats Park is a great venue. And again, I wanted that feedback because it was the first show, and I conceded up front it could have been totally about my seat location, which was in the actual stadium seating itself, just to the side of the stage. But the first seats to the side of the stage are still, you know, 250 to 300 feet away. I mean, you really couldn't see much. You're just far away from the stage unless you're on the field or in that pit section. So I got a lot of feedback from people, and I appreciate that. Most people said it was just an aberration, that this was just, you know, to give it another shot with the next show. And I think Springsteen's coming in September. I don't think I'm going to that show. But anyway, I did get this from Chuck and a few others. He kind of wrapped up the sentiment of just a few other people that seem to believe that Nats Park is a great venue for concerts, but that Monday night may not have been the best night. Chuck wrote, "I've been to several shows at Nats Park, and the venue has always been great, but I was there Monday night as well for Green Day Smashing Pumpkins, and I agreed, acoustically, it seemed off. It could have been my seat location, but it wasn't what it's been before." So, anyway, it wasn't that I was ripping Nats Park or the people, you know, that worked down at the stadium for the show. I just was curious as to whether or not a baseball park with that kind of configuration is great for concerts. Most stadium concert experiences for me over the years have been great, but they've all been in traditional football stadiums. Anyway, thanks for all the feedback to all of you that wrote in. This from Stephen H., different subject. Stephen H. writes, "Your 10-7 prediction is ridiculous." Yes, last week I decided to share with all of you what I've been thinking, which is I'm just kind of optimistic about this first season with Jaden Daniels at quarterback, this first season with Dan Quinn and his new staff, including Cliff Kingsbury, and I think they could be the team that ends up being the surprise team in the NFC. Do I love their roster? I don't love their roster. Do I think it's the worst roster in the league or the worst roster in the NFC or one of the two or three worst? I don't, actually. I think a lot of these players probably are better than what they showed last year, and a lot of the players that played last year aren't going to play this year. There are a lot of new players, and I think they just need to be coached up better. I think last year was a real outlier in terms of what that roster was capable of because of the situation, which was a head coach and every other coach essentially in a lame duck situation, and it just was not healthy from the beginning last year. But anyway, Steven writes, "Your 10-7 prediction is ridiculous." He writes, "I love that the old Kevin is back," and I think he's referring to, it's been a while, but for, you know, a few years, especially during the Shanahan era, I was more optimistic and hopeful than I was after he and all of those great coaches left. He said, "I love that the old Kevin is back, but this team doesn't need these kind of expectations." Kinds of expectations is probably proper. "This is a season that should be," and he puts it in quotes, "about back to respectability. 7 wins, 3 more than last year, would be hugely successful. Obviously, with the idea that Daniels is good, but we don't need 10 this year. We need 10 in the years following the about back to respectability season." Steven, are you seriously? What kind of approach is that? 7 wins, woo! 3 more than last year. Look, if we get to that point at the end of the year, I'm not suggesting that at the end of the year, if Daniels is good and they won 7 games and there were a lot of moments and there was an uptick at the end, that we're not going to deem the season to be successful. But to think that way going in, oh my God, that's so defeatist. Seriously? This is the NFL. It changes every week, let alone year to year. Houston was supposed to win 4 games last year. Their over-under was 4.5, so they were supposed to win 4 or 5. This kind of thing happens all the time. I know it's never happened with this team, or it's been a long time since it's happened with this team. But there is a more conducive structure and atmosphere for the franchise now to participate as an NFL franchise with the other 31 teams now versus when it was owned by somebody else. There wasn't much of a chance. We did have to suspend reality because it really wasn't possible. You know, 10 wins, a 10-7 season off of 4-13 really wasn't possible. Although they did win 9 in 2015. They did win 10 in 2012, but I understand they have not won a playoff game since the 2005 season. But no, I mean, part of why now we can, and it's not false optimism from my standpoint at all. It's actually what I really have a gut feel on. Now, it is jaded by Jaden, no doubt, in my belief that he has an opportunity as a guy who's played a lot in college and was sensational as a college football player last year in particular. And to me, you know, is exactly the kind of quarterback you need in today's game. So my optimism is certainly influenced by what I think of Jaden Daniels, but it's more than that. It's Cliff Kingsbury. It's a culture change. It's Dan Quinn. It's Frankie Louvu. It's Jeremy Chinn. It's Bobby Wagner. It's what I think John and Duran are chomping at the bit to get to this year, which is a redemption year. You know, it's Terry McLaurin. It's Jahan Dotson. It's, you know, the backfield with Brian Robinson Jr. in particular, who essentially played in a backfield last year where, you know, it was a long shot that he'd get the ball in a running situation with the way the game was called. There's just a lot of, I think, upward positive momentum building. Will it manifest itself in a 10-7 season and a wild card berth? Probably not. Probably not. But can you legitimately think in those terms now? I think you can. I mean, the wild card is the quarterback. Not everybody, not all of you feel the same way that I do. I know many of you really wanted them to select Drake May. Some of you really wanted J.J. McCarthy. And by the way, you might end up being right. Who the hell knows? I wanted Jaden Daniels. They drafted Jaden Daniels. The word on Jaden Daniels has been very positive. My God, some of the praise after yesterday's training camp practice, and trust me, I'm not taking training camp praise or training camp practices and extrapolating it out to, yes, I'm going to be right about this 10-7. None of this stuff that we're hearing, seeing, reading about means much. You go back for 10, 15 years, especially since training camp has changed so much in more recent years. You just don't know anything at this point. You know, again, I think sometimes what players and coaches say more meaningful than what we see, but I'm not basing it on that. But I think 10-7, it might be super aggressive. It probably is, but I don't think it's ridiculous. What I think is ridiculous is anybody that is a fan of the team, of an NFL team, that goes into a season saying that 7 wins, 3 more than last year, would be hugely successful. And, oh, we don't need 10 this year. We need that down the road. What? It's a clean slate. You're 0-0 going to Tampa Bay September 8th. You got a whole new coaching staff. You got a whole new front office. You got a new quarterback. You got, right now, more than half of the starters, half anyway, perhaps more than half, will be new, brand new, not on the team last year. I don't know why it's crazy to think aggressively or optimistically. I mean, anybody that goes into a season, an NFL season, and says 7 wins would be hugely successful, I mean, sorry, brother, but I wouldn't want to be in business with you. I wouldn't want you out selling for my company. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What would be respectability? What is, you know, within the bounds or within reality to kind of at least think of now, you know, about this franchise with the way it is structured, with the way it's set up? I don't think 10-7 is ridiculous at all. I mean, I could look really silly at the end of the year if they go 2-15 or 4-13 again or 5-12 and Daniel stinks and it's clear he's not the guy and they made a big mistake. All of that's in play. It's in play for a lot of teams with the exception of maybe 5 or 6 squads, you know, with clear-cut elite quarterback play, elite coaching. You know, Kansas City's not going 5-12 if Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback for 17 games. As long as Kyle Shanahan's the coach in San Francisco, more likely than not, they're not going 4-13. 301-230-0980. I'm just curious as to whether or not there's anybody out there that agrees with Stephen H. that respectability would be 7 wins, 3 more than last year, and it would be a hugely successful season. If it's actually healthy to go into a season thinking that way. I guess lowering the bar always works. And I'm not trying to be the over-promiser, under-deliverer here. I don't have any stake in the actual delivery of the record. I don't have any input in that. 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
I mean, Stephen H. writes, your 10-7 prediction is ridiculous. I love that the old Kevin is back, but this team doesn't need these kinds of expectations. This is a season that should be about back to respectability. 7 wins, 3 more than last year, would be hugely successful. Obviously, with the idea that Daniels is good. But we don't need 10 this year. We need it next year and down the road. I don't know. Every NFL season to me is its own entity. I would never go into a season thinking that you know, we're just trying to wend our way back to respectability. At the end of the year, it would be okay to think that way. I don't think that's a very healthy way to think going in. Of course, the way you think as a fan doesn't really impact anything. I would just hate like hell to think that Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. and Josh Harris and Adam Peters are sitting around going, let's figure out a way to get to 7 wins and get back to respectability. They understand what these NFL seasons are. They're wrapped up into these tight little packages of, you know, annual big change. You can't so much that you can't predict can dictate whether or not you have a surprise good season or a surprise bad season. Health means so much. When you play teams versus who you're playing matters a lot. And obviously, the quarterback means a hell of a lot. Your reaction to this, 301-230-0980. Let's start with Kurt in Hagerstown. Kurt, go ahead.
And thanks for taking
Kurt,
my
you
call.
There? Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Can you
good,
hear me?
Man. Yep, got you now.
Hey, look, that guy Kevin H., he killed his own argument, okay? He wants to change the culture. The way you change the culture is every single Sunday you walk onto that field with the mentality and knowing in your mind and heart and soul that you're going to win that game. And you don't lose until the game's over. And even then, you're in the ice tub on Monday, the weight room, getting better, and you walk back on the field knowing you're going to win every Sunday. That's how you change the culture. These coaches, these players, they don't think like these fans. They don't think like me and you and us. I mean, I'm a little bit different. You got to beat me before I say you beat me. And even then, I'm going to find a way to get better.
Coach, put me in, man. Put me into the game.
You know what
I'm with you,
know
Kurt.
What I mean, why do you think? Why do you
it's
think
ridiculous. I would never think that way
Sunday.
Going into a season. It's the last thing that I would want my coaches and players thinking, how do we get to 7 wins?
We're going to the playoffs, and everybody's going to be 0-0. And anything less than that is a loser mentality. It's loser. It's a loser thought. Man,
thanks,
unless people get hurt, we're going to win. And anybody that thinks different man, what are you doing, man? Write an article, be a fan, go play Monopoly, get out of here, man. Get in the weight room.
Put me on your roster, coach. I'm ready to go into the game. Appreciate it. Let's go to my guy Kevin in Arlington. Kevin, go ahead.
Hey, Kev. Wow, Kurt's fired up, man. I don't need my coffee this morning. but he he's absolutely right. To me, this is what it's going to look like, Kevin, if we're back to respectability, okay? Daniels is going to be obviously the guy, maybe even in contention for rookie of the year. It'll be 8 or 9 wins, okay? But here are 3 things I think really show we're back and on our way to being relevant. I want to go 3-3 minimal in the division. I want to start winning again at home. Amazing, we had 1 home win last year, and I happened to go to it. That was the opener. And then the biggest thing, no more primetime Chicago Bear games where we are the embarrassment of the National Football League, where we soil ourselves in primetime. Is that too much to ask? To me, that shows, okay, this team's coming. What do you think?
I don't know. I think you're getting too specific. I understand what that would, do in terms of PTSD. If, on Monday night, September 23rd, Cincinnati, they lay a big fat egg and they lose 42-10 and they fall to 0-3. I understand that. I don't know. I just think that this is brand new. So much about it, Kevin, of course, is brand new, including the way so many feel about the team and, a lot of the things that we've discussed many times before, name, et cetera. But, yeah, I think this is a whole new regime and a whole new chance. Thanks, as always. Let's go to Jason in Omaha. Jason, go ahead.
What's up, Kevin?
What's up, Jason?
Yeah, respectability is that 7 wins is definitely not respectable. You said being too specific is saying let's try to split those division games. That's all we need to see, because if we can't beat the Giants, then what are we doing? The new regime will be off to a bad start. So I just think we need to play well in the division, be competitive, not get blown out on that Cincinnati game. But it's going to be baby steps. And I personally, I think you hit it on the head. Like, it's no way that we can't win 10 games this year. And that's just being competitive.
Well, there is a way.
There's a way they could lose 10 games.
I just think that going into the season with this mindset of, hey, man, 3 wins, or let's double the win total from last year, that would be hugely successful. I would never think that way going into a season. Look, I actually in many ways think this season is all about Jaden Daniels, but when you start an NFL season, because of the fine line between winning and losing with basically 3/4 of the teams, you've got a shot. Everybody kind of has a shot to win 9 and be a wild card team. Every year, you end up with 2 or 3 teams that were supposed to suck before the year started.
You cannot go into the year saying, I want to win 3 more games than I did the previous year. It's just, he is a fan that's been beaten, so we got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he also, I don't think he's ever played either, because you can't, it's no winning in having a losing record. You know what I mean? So, unless just Jaden just has a rookie of the year type year, and we just look great on offense, and it's the defense that's holding us back a little bit. But no, I'm right with you with the 10 wins. That is being optimistic, and that's what being a fan is all about. So appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, man. As always, appreciate it, Jason. Let's go to Ross in Tampa. Ross, go ahead.
What's going on, Kevin?
What's up,
hey,
Ross? How are
you? Hey, so one thing, I'm good, man, trying to survive this Tampa heat as always, but I'll put it this way to you, man. The thing I won't do is knock a fellow fan in terms of their prediction. Listen, I think what we need to focus on, like a couple guys had already touched on it. My fault for the background noise. But
that's all right.
We are 4-13 in the last couple of years against the division. I want to see how we can do against divisionals. I want to see how we can do in the division against these teams, man. I really think it does fall on Jaden Daniels, but I don't want to hold the bar too high because once you do that, you set yourself up for disappointment. 4-14 is the exact divisional record. If we can at least split the series, that's like the only big-time expectations I'm holding for this team right now. But if we make it to the playoffs like the way the Texans did or the way the Colts almost did with two rookie quarterbacks, then I think that'll be us exceeding expectations, man. What say you, big dog?
Well, I think, you know, when you're not the only person that says it that way. You know, this idea of, you know, splitting in the division or winning more games in the division. I always find that a little bit odd because of the 17 games played, 11 of them, 11 are against teams not in your division. You better do damn well, really, really great in those other 11 games, or the division record's not going to matter. So I know that we've been in one of these marquee divisions, division slash conferences for a long time now. The NFC East is, you know, there's a brand. You know, it's a brand, the NFC East, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Eagles, the Skins. And we want to do well in the division, but it is equally, if not more important, to do well outside of the division because that's where the majority of your games are. Let's go to Athan. Athan is calling from Annapolis. Athan, thanks. Go ahead.
I just think all these people who are calling in and have these low expectations, that they eat, sleep, and breathe losing in life in general. You should
really
have high expectations.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've been bad around.
I don't mind
a
prediction. Let me just cut you off for 1 second. I'm going to let you finish. I don't mind predictions that are, this is what I think they're going to be. You know, they're going to win 5 games. That's fine. But to go into a season thinking that 7 wins would be hugely successful and we don't need 10 this year, we need it starting next year. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go into, you know, the proverbial foxhole with that guy.
Yeah, well, the people who are saying that to you, Kevin, are serial losers, so you can just block that out. But they were 4 wins last year. They had horrible coaching, and the team gave up towards the last 8 or 9
That's right.
games of the season. They got progressively worse at the end of the year. It's a whole new regime. Do we have some question marks of some key areas that we need to address? Yeah. But if the quarterback can help them overcome it, I think they're going to be a lot better. I think 9-8 is more realistic. And also, Kevin, they need a kicker. There are going to be some grinded out games in the fourth quarter. They have got to find themselves a kicker. I heard that guy they have out there sucks.
Well, let's wait until they get into, you know, some competitive situations, maybe in a preseason game. Kickers actually feel it, you know, in a preseason game more than maybe some of the other positions. But yeah, I think it's very possible the kicker on this roster opening day, the person they trot out to kick against the Buccaneers isn't on the roster right now. Let's go to my guy, Billy. Billy, go ahead.
Kevin, good morning.
What's up, Billy?
Everybody wants to go 17-0, Kevin, but you got to operate in reality here. This is not the first, just for the audience, this is not the first year of the ownership group. This is the second year of the ownership group, so let's not pretend like this is all brand new. They should have fired Ron the day that they got here.
Oh,
if they
God,
hadn't
you're
paying
a broken
attention
record.
To anything that had gone on.
Who would have coached
the
team? Who would have coached the team when training camp started 2 days later?
It doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? You wanted to trot out an NFL team as a first-time owner without a coach?
Kevin, they're not launching the space shuttle, dude. They're playing football.
Well, that's true, but you still need somebody to be the head coach, don't you?
You pass. You block, you tackle, you run, you pass, you catch. This whole idea that they had some type of magic formula, Ron had a magic formula, without Ron that the team would have fallen off the face of the earth. That's ridiculous, Kevin. That's outside the realm of reality of professional athletics. They were terrible. Anybody could have done better. I could have coached them better, and so could have you. And this team, this ownership group needs to provide us a little bit of a vision of what they're going to do.
What do you mean? That's what they've been doing since the season ended. You haven't seen the vision of like a traditional structure, a general manager, by the way, the most sought after GM in this particular hiring cycle?
Yeah, and by the way, the most sought-after head coach was available and didn't even get an interview. Bill Belichick.
I know how you felt about Belichick, and I don't think that's an insane thought. I'm with you on that to a certain degree. I'm fine with what they did, but it's odd that Belichick didn't get a job, that's for sure.
I hope they kick butt. I really do. I hope they go 17-0. I hope I would get as much enjoyment out of it as anyone. But I think we got to set expectations here with the first-year head coach and first-year quarterback. The other thing I would say before I bid you a farewell would be, if we want the team name back, the former team name back, and I agree with you, it's very unlikely that they could ever get it back. The reason it's not coming back is because of Dan Schneider. The name Redskins used to be associated with greatness. And over 20 years, the name Redskin became associated with perennial loser, dumpster fire, and taking pictures of people when they're not looking. So if you want to bring the name back, at some
I know,
point,
I hear you, but there's a lot more to it. But you're right. You're right. In some ways, had they been really good, it would have been an even bigger target for a lot of people. But I hear what you're saying. I got to roll. I want to get Sabah in here. She's been on hold for a while before we get to Grant Paulson. Go ahead, Sabah.
Hey there, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I do agree with that other gentleman. Ron should have been gone day one. Taylor Heineke would have been the coach that I would have picked. All right, here we go.
Yes, shocker. What do you think? I mean, you might be pushing him as an independent candidate in the upcoming election.
Hey, I definitely would. If he's running, I'll
You'd definitely vote for him.
I'll be his vice president. Okay, so here's the deal. I hope that Jaden Daniels works out, but I'm a realist. I've looked back at all the number two picks. I've told this to Doc, too. So here we go. Number two quarterbacks. Zach Wilson, Heath Shuler, Ryan Leaf, Mitch Trubisky, Carson Wentz, RG3, Rick Meyer, Donovan McNabb, you say he worked out, C.J. Stroud 1 year so far, but Mitch Trubisky went to the playoffs twice, and he ended up not working out. Even our own
coincidence.
Number two pick. Shuler, Arrington, RG3, and Young.
Okay.
So even our own number two picks, Heath Shuler, Arrington, RG3, and Chase Young. Arrington and Chase Young underachieved. They weren't what we thought they were going to be. You said that you have confidence because you finally got a quarterback that was highly successful in college and his game translates. Well, guess who else had that exact quarterback? Tennessee, when they drafted Marcus Mariota, number two overall. Right. And how did that work out? So I'm tired of everybody saying we got the guy. We don't got anything. Chances are we don't have the guy, and it's not his fault. He may be rookie of the year and then flop. Get an injury, done. So I'm not very optimistic, and I want my name back, and I don't really feel as much for the team until my name comes back, or at least my identity.
Okay.
But for
all right.
You to
I mean, per usual,
set,
you've taken what the topic
pick.
Was, and you've veered off the road in the direction that you feel comfortable driving in. I will mention, by the way, Burt Jones, who was an excellent quarterback, was number two overall in 1973.
Okay. So what percentage is that? 10%?
Who cares?
How many Super Bowls did Burt Jones
win? Who cares? Who cares what pick they were in terms of first, second, or third? All right, I got to go. Grant Paulson's going to join me next. We'll talk some football team. We'll also talk about the Nats' ridiculous loss last night and why they didn't trade Kyle Finnegan. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Let's start with a little bit of breaking Commanders news. This is according to Ian Rappaport. The Commanders have re-signed Byron Pringle at wide receiver. Maybe somebody that gets a little bit of sixth team reps or in return game. He actually wasn't terrible in the return game. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Bears extend DJ Moore yesterday. 4 years, $110 million for their wide receiver. In Major League Baseball, Nats lose 17-0 in baseball. It was one of the worst Patrick Corbin experiences of his time here. Three innings pitched, 13 hits, 11 runs, 10 of them earned. They finished the series with Arizona today at 3:40. You can hear it on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan. Yesterday in Olympic action, Team USA Gymnastics wins team gold. It's the first time since 2016. Simone Biles essentially did the trick with her floor routine to win the gold. If you're looking for Katie Ledecky, she'll be in action today at 3:04 p.m. for her 1,500-meter final. She crushed it yesterday in her semis. And that's what's trending.
17-0 last night. Dave Jagler on that last run for the Diamondbacks said, and the extra point is good. That was an odd score and an odd beatdown. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is my friend Grant Paulson, who hosts, of course, Grant and Danny on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan, 2 o'clock daily. And I thought about you because I was curious as to, well, we'll get to the trade deadline stuff in a moment, but why do they keep putting Patrick Corbin out there at this point? And why did he leave him in as long as he left him in last night?
Well, two reasons, I guess, for the first answer, right? Number one, from a baseball standpoint, and maybe this is also the answer to the other question, he saves their bacon a lot by just pitching deep into games, and he saves their bullpen. They've got a lot of young starters, and with that can come inconsistency, right? Mitchell Parker got removed in the first inning 2 starts ago, and in the second inning had the bullpen up and had to be yanked in his second-to-last start. So occasionally with him or with DJ Hers, who's generally running into some issues in the fourth or fifth inning, your bullpen gets overworked. Mackenzie Gore has really struggled, who's supposed to be the ace of the staff. He has not gotten deep into starts. So Corbin is the guy they pay a lot of money to just get kicked in the teeth, basically. As an example, if you remember back to the end of the homestand when they were playing the Padres last week in a day game, Corbin came out. There was a rain delay of over an hour. I would say 90% of pitchers in baseball would have been shut down at that point, right, in the first inning, a few pitches in. He came back out, threw 100 pitches, and went 7 innings. So they kind of treat him as a rubber arm. They can do whatever they want with. If he gets hurt, so be it. And Corbin is fine with it. I mean, he's a horse who knows his role on this team is to be a veteran leader in the clubhouse. He's not providing a whole lot in terms of stuff or pitchability or swing and miss at this point. So he's here to eat innings. So that's kind of why both they left him in for the 3 innings last night and why he continues to get trotted out there. It's like Top Gun, man. You keep sending him up. But we're nearing the end
here.
Don't
you show mercy, though, at some point? I understand what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense. But he faced 7 consecutive batters in the third, in the second inning that made it got hits, gave up 6 runs in the process, went through 11 batters in, you know, in that one inning alone, and then they brought him back for the third. That to me seemed like, I mean, maybe he's a glutton for punishment and can take it, but that's one of those where your corner guy's got to throw the towel in and say enough is enough.
So I'm laughing because just hearing it is so staggering. Like, it doesn't happen.
Right.
It's so silly. But there's a guy that I actually texted someone with the team last night during the game. And I said, I would always want a guy removed, but I kind of want to see 25
how bad
hits
it can
and 20
get?
Runs. Yeah, like 25 hits and 20 runs in a box score, because he's the only guy in baseball that would be allowed to just go out there and do that. And the response was, Patrick would do that too. Like, not meaning that he's bad enough to allow it, but like he'd have no problem. Just his value to the team is essentially not performance at this juncture. Right. And the idea is you have a better chance to win today with a bullpen that's beat up here in the dog days of August, or I guess the final day of July, you know, if he's able to wear it a little bit. So that's why they did what they did. I mean, as far as why he's still making starts, there's value solely in what we're talking about, but then also it's just the money. I mean, if you look at the team, nobody on this team gets paid. His adjusted payroll salary is $25 million. His base salary is $35 million. Nobody else on the team makes more than $6 million this year. K-Bert Ruiz, Kyle Finnegan, the closer, makes $5 million. And then the next number is like $1.9 million for Luis Garcia. So if you're looking at actual used salary, not guys that they're paying deferred money to, or Strasburg, who's retired, it's basically him taking up about half the payroll. They're going to trot him out there. They're going to let him make what is now, what, 2 more months worth of starts? And then they'll shake his hand and say thanks for 2019.
What do you think happened from, and I know a baseball season is long, I understand that, but the first half of the season, you know, they were battling. They were within a game of 500 multiple times. They were actually in the standings in wild card position. Have they just worn down and worn out?
Yeah, I think to some extent. The big key to me was when they were at their peak, Kev, and when they were a 500 team, they were pitching at a top five level in the league from a starting rotation standpoint. And I didn't know that that was completely sustainable, but it was the apex, right? It was the peak of Mitchell Parker was running hot. Jake Irvin, who's actually been excellent still lately as well, was pitching like a top 10 pitcher in the league. Mackenzie Gore, who's really regressed and in the middle of a really bad stretch, was struggling. Right. Corbin was throwing okay. He was certainly the worst of their starters. But and if you remember at that time early on, Trevor Williams had been excellent. You know, if you look at his numbers, he got hurt at the end of that run, but his ERA was in the twos, and he was basically a five-and-dive guy, the opposite of Corbin, where we're only letting him go through the order twice. But through those two times, he was very consistent. And so they were really five deep in the rotation. And if you took Corbin's numbers out, I did this a couple times, right when they were around 500 when you're referencing, they were the number three rotation ERA in baseball. I mean, that's pretty staggering. And they have not been able to keep that up. So with a bad lineup that doesn't score enough, and a bullpen that's been pretty good over the duration of the year, but it's certainly also, as guys got overworked, Hunter Harvey came back to the pack. Finnegan now seems fatigued and isn't pitching as sharp. Dylan Floro gave up his first home run the other night, lost the game, who they traded. I think, you know, the rotation, the bullpen coming back to the pack some, relying more on a lineup that's just not going to win you games, that kind of spelled doom in a way.
You know, you brought up Mackenzie Gore. I mean, this is the guy that I think most, and I think probably you as well, would say if there is a future ace of a staff in a contending situation, it'll be Mackenzie Gore. In five starts this in July, he's got an 8.27 ERA. Is he hurt?
Great question. This is the worst stretch, certainly in Washington, and I would say in the big leagues for Mackenzie Gore. He went through one really rough patch with the Padres in his first year before he was traded, and he was actually, at that time, shut down with an arm issue. I don't think he's hurt because he's so important, as you said, to the long-term build that I don't think they would be trotting him out there if there was any sign of any issues in a lost season. They would shut him down at the first sign of any problems. He's only 25, and he is the highest upside of all the starters that they've got. If you just look at pure stuff, you know, the fastball from the left side, he can run up to 97, 98 miles an hour. It's a breaking run value that's 66th percentile, meaning that, you know, slider, the swing and miss, really, really well-liked pitch as well analytically. By far, the best repertoire of the group. He has really struggled with command lately. I think that's the big issue. Early in the year, he left his problem from a season ago behind where he would fall behind. He threw a lot of pitches early. He would be, you know, 2-0, 3-1 in counts, and then damage gets done on that fastball. You could sit on that pitch. Well, lately in that stretch you're referencing, if you look, it's a lot of three-inning, four-inning outings. He's throwing 100 pitches. He's not getting out of the fifth. A lot of foul balls against him all year long. But now it's, you know, behind in the count. Walks are up again. So to me, that's the key with him. If he's able to keep his pitch count down in that, you know, 11 to 14 pitches per inning range, where he's working quickly, he's ahead in counts, he's a different guy. But it's been 20 to 25 pitch innings, and he's done in four innings, and, you know, he's behind constantly, and he's getting teed off on. His ERA has ballooned up to 4.5. It was barely over 3 eight or nine starts ago. So it's been really ugly, no doubt about it. But still 120 strikeouts in 105 innings. The stuff is unquestioned, and they just got to iron out whether it's a mechanical flaw, whatever's going on, to get him to throw more strikes.
We're talking to Grant Paulson, at Grant Paulson on X on Twitter. Just kind of recap, summarize, and analyze Mike Rizzo's pre-trade deadline deals, including the one he didn't make with Kyle Finnegan.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think they did really well, particularly in the Harvey deal, I thought, in terms of value. That was a non-closing reliever who they got on a waiver claim initially, who they viewed, in my opinion, as someone that had been overworked, was kind of, you know, coming back to the pack a little bit, regressing in season. He was obviously under control through next year, which made it enticing to keep him around. But they flipped him to the Royals for a third base prospect in Caden Wallace, who is number two in Kansas City's bad minor league system. He becomes the number six prospect right away here in Washington. He's actually had a setback. I heard he got hit by a pitch while rehabbing, so he has not yet played in the national system. He's fine. It's not like a long-term injury. but he has not yet debuted. And then they got the 39th overall pick in the draft. You're not allowed to trade draft picks except basically picks that you get as compensation now. Mm-hmm. And so they flipped that pick to Washington, and that pick became Caleb Lomavita, a catching prospect in college I really like out of Cal, who I've had on my baseball show a couple times. Really, really, like, sharp pitch caller, just a guy that, as an interview, you could tell, has a chance to really help in the clubhouse as well. So that was the Harvey deal. That was a no-brainer. The other deals that they made, certainly I think one other deal had really good value, and that was the trade they made where they gave up Lane Thomas. I don't think they wanted to trade Lane Thomas. Mike Rizzo made it pretty clear yesterday when he met with reporters they didn't trade Kyle Finnegan, to answer that question, because he had a year of control and they think he could close for them and be a good player on a potential wild card team next year. There's a chance they're going to go for it and really spend a little money this offseason when Corbin comes off the books. And nobody on the team is really making any money. So now you've got to spend some money. So if they go out and they spend on a 30-homer bat at first base, or they bring in a mid-rotation starting pitcher to serve the Corbin role of eating innings who can actually also be effective, you know, maybe they feel like all of a sudden they're an 82, 83-win team. And if you're able to do that, you probably need a bullpen. So if you're trading Harvey and you're trading Floro, which was just a deal where you got the best minor leaguer you could, not much of a prospect, do you really want to trade your top three relievers and have to rebuild the whole bullpen? And they decided no. But on Thomas, who had a year of control left, I think they just got an offer they didn't think they could turn down. The 19-year-old single-A lefty, Alex Clemmy, that they brought back was a top 60 pick last year, who's got huge strikeout numbers. The big kid, 6'6", he's kind of limmy and whippy with his left arm. He reminds me a lot of DJ Hurs. Like, maybe he ends up in the bullpen if he doesn't throw more strikes because he walks too many guys. But you'll take your chances at 19 that you can fix that. And they've done a pretty good job developing arms this year with their new approach in the system. And his fastball touch is 99. So that's a big-time, high-end, high-ceiling, fringe top five prospect in a good system that they brought over as the centerpiece of the package. They also got another teenage infielder in Rafael Ramirez, whose dad played in the big leagues. And the third player in that deal is actually really interesting. Not as high a prospect because he's older. He's 23. He's in AAA. He's hitting 300 with 17 homers and has 15 steals at AAA this year with an 850 OPS. He's got 30 big league at bats, and he could help them next week if they wanted to. So I don't think they wanted to trade Lane Thomas. They just got an offer in a seller's market they couldn't turn down, and that offer didn't come for Finnegan. I think they value him as a high-end closer, and maybe the rest of the sport said, well, he's a closer on your team. You're a bad team, and he'd be the setup man on our team. And that disagreement probably led to them not getting what they wanted.
You know, one more question, and I do want to talk some football with you, but just the league overall right now, there at times have been teams that appeared to be in the process of like a true dominant regular season. The Orioles would be an example of that. Philly would be an example of that. And yet, a lot of these teams have had some real droughts. The Orioles had one. The Yankees obviously had one. The Phillies are kind of in the midst of one right now. Who are the best teams? Who's going to be there at the end? I know it gets a little bit random in the postseason, but who do you think the top team in the American League is and the top team in the National League is right now?
Well, the Phillies, to me, are still the best team in the NL, and you're correct. I mean, they've dropped 3 in a row in 7 of 10. Their schedule's gotten a lot harder. I didn't like the narrative early in the year, and I still don't, that they were as good as they were because they were playing a weak schedule, essentially. But I think it's impossible to ignore that the back half was more loaded and it's going to be more competitive. But also, you said this earlier, I mean, this is such a marathon. This is baseball, right? It so happens for some of these teams, if you do your heavy lifting early, that you're going to run out of steam later. But you're not going to win 112 games, you know, that they were on pace for at one point or whatever that number was. It doesn't happen. So it's a six-month season. You're playing every day. This is kind of the beauty of the sport. And at some point, you're going to hit that wall if you got off to a fast start. And the inverse is also very much possible. If you're a pretty good team, if you built a solid roster, A.J. Preller in San Diego, and you're not playing very well early, well, next thing you know, you're going to get on a heater like the Padres have to close to within 5.5 of the Dodgers now. At 7 over .500. I look at the Astros the same way. I think they're like 32-11 in their last 43 games, something like that. You know, they were awful for the first couple months of the year. Now all of a sudden you look up at the standings in the AL West and they're right back where they normally are within a game of first place. So I think baseball's happening, but I guess directly to answer your question, Phillies are the best team in the NL with the Dodgers as the Robin of their Batman. And then the American League, I'm still a big believer in the Orioles. I just think their lineup is excellent. Run differential plus 87. Not on par with the Yankees, but it's better than everybody else. I like them better than New York. So I would say they're number one. And I'd roll with the Guardians over the Yankees. I like their pitching more. And I just think that's a October-built team. I like the move they made for Lane Thomas. Some of those stuff they've done as the year's going on.
You know, there's another interesting story for the opposite reasons. The Chicago White Sox right now are on pace to lose more games than the 62 Mets. You know, the 120. I know that there's a season way back in the 19th century, I believe, where there were 100 and something, you know, more losses than the 120. But the White Sox are having right now, historically, an awful season. I don't know if it'll...
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
17-0 last night. Dave Jagler on that last run for the Diamondbacks said, and the extra point is good. That was an odd score and an odd beatdown. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is my friend Grant Paulson, who hosts, of course, Grant and Danny on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan, 2 o'clock daily. And I thought about you because I was curious as to, well, we'll get to the trade deadline stuff in a moment, but why do they keep putting Patrick Corbin out there at this point? And why did he leave him in as long as he left him in last night?
Well, two reasons, I guess, for the first answer, right? Number one, from a baseball standpoint, and maybe this is also the answer to the other question, he saves their bacon a lot by just pitching deep into games, and he saves their bullpen. They've got a lot of young starters, and with that can come inconsistency, right? Mitchell Parker got removed in the first inning two starts ago, and in the second inning had the bullpen up and had to be yanked in his second-to-last start. So occasionally with him or with DJ Herz, who's generally running into some issues in the fourth or fifth inning, your bullpen gets overworked. Mackenzie Gore has really struggled, who's supposed to be the ace of the staff. He has not gotten deep into starts. So Corbin is the guy they pay a lot of money to just get kicked in the teeth, basically. As an example, if you remember back to the end of the homestand when they were playing the Padres last week in a day game, Corbin came out. There was a rain delay of over an hour. I would say 90% of pitchers in baseball would have been shut down at that point, right in the first inning, a few pitches in. He came back out, threw 100 pitches, and went seven innings. So they kind of treat him as a rubber arm. They can do whatever they want with. If he gets hurt, so be it. And Corbin is fine with it. I mean, he's a horse who knows his role on this team is to be a veteran leader in the clubhouse. He's not providing a whole lot in terms of stuff or pitchability or swing and miss at this point. So he's here to eat innings. So that's kind of why both they left him in for the three innings last night. And why he continues to get trotted out there. It's like Top Gun, man. You keep sending him up. But we're nearing the end
don't
here.
Don't you show mercy, though, at some point? I understand what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense. But he faced seven consecutive batters in the third, in the second inning that made it, got hits, gave up six runs in the process, went through 11 batters in, you know, in that one inning alone, and then they brought him back for the third. That to me seemed like, I mean, maybe he's a glutton for punishment and can take it, but that's one of those where your corner guy's got to throw the towel in and say enough is enough.
So I'm laughing because just hearing it is so staggering. Like, it doesn't happen.
Right.
It's so silly. But there's a guy that I actually texted someone with the team last night during the game. And I said, I would always want a guy removed, but I kind of want to see 25
how bad
hits
it can
and 20
get.
Runs. Yeah, like 25 hits and 20 runs in a box score, because he's the only guy in baseball that would be allowed to just go out there and do that. And the response was, Patrick would do that too. Like, not meaning that he's bad enough to allow it, but like he'd have no problem just his value to the team is essentially not performance at this juncture. Right. And the idea is you have a better chance to win today with a bullpen that's beat up here in the dog days of August, or I guess the final day of July, you know, if he's able to wear it a little bit. So that's why they did what they did. I mean, as far as why he's still making starts, there's value solely in what we're talking about, but then also it's just the money. I mean, if you look at the team, nobody on this team gets paid. His adjusted payroll salary is $25 million. His base salary is $35 million. Nobody else on the team makes more than $6 million this year. K-Bert Ruiz, Kyle Finnegan, the closer, makes five. And then the next number is like 1.9 for Luis Garcia. So if you're looking at actual used salary, not guys that they're paying deferred money to, or Strasburg, who's retired, it's basically him taking up about half the payroll. They're going to trot him out there. They're going to let him make what is now, what, two more months worth of starts? And then they'll shake his hand and say thanks for 2019.
What do you think happened from, and I know a baseball season is long, I understand that, but the first half of the season, you know, they were battling. They were within a game of 500 multiple times. They were actually in the standings in wild card position. Have they just worn down and worn out?
Yeah, I think to some extent. The big key to me was, when they were at their peak, Kev, and when they were a 500 team, they were pitching at a top five level in the league from a starting rotation standpoint. And I didn't know that that was completely sustainable, but it was the apex, right? It was the peak of Mitchell Parker was running hot. Jake Irvin, who's actually been excellent still lately as well, was pitching like a top 10 pitcher in the league. Mackenzie Gore, who's really regressed and in the middle of a really bad stretch, was struggling. Right. Corbin was throwing okay. He was certainly the worst of their starters. But and if you remember at that time, early on, Trevor Williams had been excellent. You know, if you look at his numbers, he got hurt at the end of that run, but his ERA was in the twos, and he was basically a five-and-dive guy, the opposite of Corbin, where we're only letting him go through the order twice. But through those two times, he was very consistent. And so they were really five deep in the rotation. And if you took Corbin's numbers out, I did this a couple times, right when they were around 500 when you're referencing, they were the number three rotation ERA in baseball. I mean, that's pretty staggering. And they have not been able to keep that up. So with a bad lineup that doesn't score enough and a bullpen that's been pretty good over the duration of the year, but it's certainly also, as guys got overworked, Hunter Harvey came back to the pack. Finnegan now seems fatigued and isn't pitching as sharp. Dylan Floro gave up his first home run the other night, lost the game who they traded. I think, you know, the rotation, the bullpen coming back to the pack some, relying more on a lineup that's just not going to win you games, that kind of spelled doom in a way.
You know, you brought up Mackenzie Gore. I mean, this is the guy that I think most, and I think probably you as well, would say if there is a future ace of a staff in a contending situation, it'll be Mackenzie Gore. In five starts this in July, he's got an 8.27 ERA. Is he hurt?
Great question. This is the worst stretch, certainly in Washington, and I would say in the big leagues for Mackenzie Gore. He went through one really rough patch with the Padres in his first year before he was traded, and he was actually, at that time, shut down with an arm issue. I don't think he's hurt because he's so important, as you said, to the long-term build that I don't think they would be trotting him out there if there was any sign of any issues in a lost season. They would shut him down at the first sign of any problems. He's only 25, and he is the highest upside of all the starters that they've got. If you just look at pure stuff, you know, the fastball from the left side, he can run up to 97, 98 miles an hour. It's a breaking run value that's 66th percentile, meaning that, you know, slider, the swing and miss, really, really well-liked pitch as well analytically. By far, the best repertoire of the group. He has really struggled with command lately. I think that's the big issue. Early in the year, he left his problem from a season ago behind, where he would fall behind. He threw a lot of pitches early. He would be, you know, 2-0, 3-1 in counts, and then damage gets done on that fastball. You could sit on that pitch. Well, lately, in that stretch you're referencing, if you look, it's a lot of three-inning, four-inning outings. He's throwing 100 pitches. He's not getting out of the fifth. A lot of foul balls against him all year long. But now it's, you know, behind in the count. Walks are up again. So to me, that's the key with him. If he's able to keep his pitch count down in that, you know, 11 to 14 pitches per inning range, where he's working quickly, he's ahead in counts, he's a different guy. But it's been 20 to 25 pitch innings and he's done in four innings, and you know he's behind constantly, and he's getting teed off on. His ERA has ballooned up to 4.5. It was barely over 3 eight or nine starts ago. So it's been really ugly, no doubt about it. But still 120 strikeouts in 105 innings. The stuff is unquestioned, and they just got to iron out whether it's a mechanical flaw, whatever's going on, to get him to throw more strikes.
We're talking to Grant Paulson, at Grant Paulson on X on Twitter. Just kind of recap, summarize, and analyze Mike Rizzo's pre-trade deadline deals, including the one he didn't make with Kyle Finnegan.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think they did really well, particularly in the Harvey deal, I thought, in terms of value. That was a non-closing reliever who they got on a waiver claim initially, who they viewed, in my opinion, as someone that had been overworked, was kind of, you know, coming back to the pack a little bit, regressing in season. He was obviously under control through next year, which made it enticing to keep him around. But they flipped him to the Royals for a third base prospect in Caden Wallace, who was number two in Kansas City's bad minor league system. He becomes the number six prospect right away here in Washington. He's actually had a setback. I heard he got hit by a pitch while rehabbing, so he has not yet played in the national system. He's fine. It's not like a long-term injury. But he has not yet debuted. And then they got the 39th overall pick in the draft. You're not allowed to trade draft picks except basically picks that you get as compensation now. Mm-hmm. And so they flipped that pick to Washington, and that pick became Caleb Lomavita, a catching prospect in college I really like at Cal, who I've had on my baseball show a couple times. Really, really like sharp pitch caller, just a guy that has an interview you could tell has a chance to really help in the clubhouse as well. That was the Harvey deal. That was a no-brainer. The other deals that they made, certainly I think one other deal had really good value, and that was the trade they made where they gave up Lane Thomas. I don't think they wanted to trade Lane Thomas. Mike Rizzo made it pretty clear yesterday when he met with reporters they didn't trade Kyle Finnegan, to answer that question, because he had a year of control and they think he could close for them and be a good player on a potential wild card team next year. There's a chance they're going to go for it and really – spend a little money this offseason when Corbin comes off the books. And nobody on the team is really making any money. So now you've got to spend some money. So if they go out and they spend on a 30-homer bat at first base, or they bring in a mid-rotation starting pitcher to serve the Corbin role of eating innings who can actually also be effective, you know, maybe they feel like all of a sudden they're an 82-83 win team. And if you're able to do that, you probably need a bullpen. So if you're trading Harvey and you're trading Floro, which was just a deal where you got the best minor leaguer you could, not much of a prospect. Do you really want to trade your top three relievers and have to rebuild the whole bullpen? And they decided no. But on Thomas, who had a year of control left, I think they just got an offer they didn't think they could turn down. The 19-year-old single-A lefty, Alex Clemmie, that they brought back was a top 60 pick last year, who's got huge strikeout numbers. The big kid, 6'6", he's kind of limmy and whippy with his left arm. He reminds me a lot of DJ Hurst. Like, maybe he ends up in the bullpen if he doesn't throw more strikes because he walks too many guys. But you'll take your chances at 19 that you can fix that. And they've done a pretty good job developing arms this year with their new approach in the system. And his fastball touches 99. So that's a big-time, high-end, high-ceiling, fringe top-five prospect in a good system that they brought over as the centerpiece of the package. They also got another teenage infielder in Rafael Ramirez, whose dad played in the big leagues. And the third player in that deal is actually really interesting. Not as high a prospect because he's older. He's 23. He's in AAA. He's hitting 300 with 17 homers and has 15 steals at AAA this year with an 850 OPS. He's got 30 big league at bats, and he could help them next week if they wanted to. So I don't think they wanted to trade Lane Thomas. They just got an offer in a seller's market they couldn't turn down, and that offer didn't come for Finnegan. I think they value him as a high-end closer, and maybe the rest of the sport said, well, he's a closer on your team. You're a bad team, and he'd be the setup man on our team. And that disagreement probably led to them not getting what they wanted.
You know, one more question, and I do want to talk some football with you, but just the league overall right now, there at times have been teams that appeared to be in the process of like a true dominant regular season. The Orioles would be an example of that. Philly would be an example of that. And yet, a lot of these teams have had some real droughts. The Orioles had one. The Yankees obviously had one. The Phillies are kind of in the midst of one right now. Who are the best teams? Who's going to be there at the end? I know it gets a little bit random in the postseason, but who do you think the top team in the American League is and the top team in the National League is right now?
Well, the Phillies, to me, are still the best team in the NL, and you're correct. I mean, they've dropped 3 in a row in 7 of 10. Their schedule's gotten a lot harder. I didn't like the narrative early in the year, and I still don't, that they were as good as they were because they were playing a weak schedule, essentially. But I think it's impossible to ignore that the back half was more loaded and it's going to be more competitive. But also, you said this earlier, I mean, this is such a marathon. This is baseball, right? It so happens for some of these teams, if you do your heavy lifting early, that you're going to run out of steam later. But you're not going to win 112 games, you know, that they were on pace for at one point or whatever that number was. It doesn't happen. So it's a six-month season. You're playing every day. This is kind of the beauty of the sport. And at some point, you're going to hit that wall if you got off to a fast start. And the inverse is also very much possible. If you're a pretty good team, if you built a solid roster, A.J. Preller in San Diego, and you're not playing very well early, well, next thing you know, you're going to get on a heater like the Padres have to close to within 5.5 of the Dodgers now at 7 over .500. I look at the Astros the same way. I think they're like 32-11 in their last 43 games, something like that. You know, they were awful for the first couple months of the year. Now all of a sudden you look up at the standings in the AL West and they're right back where they normally are within a game of first place. So I think baseball's happening, but I guess directly to answer your question, Phillies are the best team in the NL with the Dodgers as the Robin of their Batman. And then the American League, I'm still a big believer in the Orioles. I just think their lineup is excellent. Run differential plus 87. Not on par with the Yankees, but it's better than everybody else. I like them better than New York. So I would say they're number one. And I'd roll with the Guardians over the Yankees. I like their pitching more. And I just think that's a October-built team. I like the move they made for Lane Thomas. Some of those stuff they've done as the year's going on.
You know, there's another interesting story for the opposite reasons. The Chicago White Sox right now are on pace to lose more games than the 62 Mets. You know, the 120. I know that there's a season way back in the 19th century, I believe, where there were 100 and something, you know, more losses than the 120. But the White Sox are having right now, historically, an awful season. I don't know if it'll continue.
They're on pace as of today to win like 38 games last night.
Yeah, I think it's 39,
Whew. I mean, it is unbelievable.
That'd be 123 losses.
That's unfathomable. And in that market with that fan base, and I mean, they care. You know, they've got full pre- and post-show staffed with former managers yelling after every game. I mean, it's not like the market.
And the Cubs stink, too. So not a good year in Chicago.
No doubt. All right. And by the way, they sold off as much as they could. I thought they would trade Garrett Crochet. He made it difficult with some of his demands, their ace pitcher. But their GM is Chris Getz, who's never done it before. He's a recent former player. It's an absolute mess. Their system has gotten a lot better with these deals, as you'd imagine. But that doesn't put the Triscuit crackers in your stomach. It's really, really bad right now.
Have you changed the way you feel about a season for our football team heading into it because it feels like a new regime and there's now a chance? Or are you still skeptical?
I'm less skeptical than I've ever been before. Like, I find myself thinking it is possible that Jaden Daniels can be Griffin and 12 or Stroud and kind of just inject a new life into this thing, and they can take flight. But I'm still a little bit in see-it-to-believe-it mode, to be completely honest. Like, I really like the staff. I completely trust Peters. I think the front office that they've put together, beyond even Peters, we talk so much about Adam, understandably, but I'm sure you've covered this in great detail. I mean, what an incredible crew of lieutenants he brought in under him. I mean, this is now as deep. He said something a couple weeks ago in a presser that I thought was awesome. Might have even been right before camp, but he said, you know, we're now close to on par with the really good organizations in the league in terms of the roles we filled out. And it tells me he's got a vision like San Francisco and Baltimore and Green Bay and so many others of the GM's one thing, but let's have two really good assistant GMs and then let's have this R&D department, and they're close. So that gives me faith. I think the fact that they're going to get way better coaching and the upgraded quarterback, hopefully. You know, those two things are what matters to me the most. Where I'm skeptical still is I know everyone loves Dan Quinn. You know, wasn't my.
No. Did we lose Grant? We lost you, brother. But I know what he was going to say because he and I have talked about this before. He wanted the offensive-minded head coach. That is, you know, more of the model in today's game to get that, you know, offensive head coach who, by the way, will stick with the franchise rather than an offensive coordinator who has great success and then gets the job, the head coaching job somewhere else, and then you're starting all over at OC. But I, you know, and to be honest with you, my preference was an offensive-minded head coach. But the number one offensive-minded head coach wasn't available because he didn't want to be a head coach. I'm not sure this team really thought much of him as the process went along anyway. But Grant, no worries. We will catch up later on. All right, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.